Hey there, everybody. Student sports broadcaster and co-host of The Sports Report and The Tailgate, Brian Sanchez here, and you're listening to radio.dominican.edu. And today, I'm bringing you something a little different. Usually, I'm the sports machine, bringing you nothing but sports. That's what I do. But sometimes, no matter how much of a fan you are, there are still real-world problems out there. And today, I'm going to be touching on those. I am bringing you a wonderful special on the First Amendment and how it affects you. The First Amendment is one of the most widely regarded amendments, if not the most widely regarded amendment. People refer to it all the time, whether it be directly, indirectly, you never know, because people are always talking about their right to free speech. But do people really understand where the First Amendment came from and how it came about? I don't think so. But that's the point of the show here tonight, folks, and that's what I'm going to be giving you. So sit back, relax, stay tuned, go ahead and learn a little something while listening to me give you tonight's special, Save the Best for First, the First Amendment story. Now, I'm going to be walking you through the First Amendment, give you a little bit of history, and then we're going to have an interview tonight with the lovely Alexandra Sladoff. She's a Piedmont resident, Piedmont in the Oakland area. And they've had the Occupy Oakland movement here as of late, and that's got First Amendment written all over it. So we will begin to that and how the First Amendment is in play right now and how it is affecting people. But first, we're going to start with what the First Amendment is. So here you go. And I quote, "Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances." So that was the formal language. We're going to break that down in a minute, make it a little more understandable for the average person listening at home. Now, the First Amendment was ratified in 1791 as a part of the Bill of Rights. This means the First Amendment has lasted over 200 years without a lot of changes. There have been some, but over 200 years, you have other amendments that just disappear or get overhauled to the point where they're nowhere near the same amendment they were when they were created. So the First Amendment is really integral to what this country is and what it has begun. So let's walk through the First Amendment step by step. First, we hit the Establishment Clause. The first part, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. This is the clause that makes sure there's a separation of church and state. This helps with religious freedom and makes sure the government always has the country in its best interest. Now, this came along because back in the early days of America, they came over the early colonists came over and settled in America because they were escaping England and its taxes and its monarchy, and they wanted to start their own country. That's why they came over here. Now, after that was established, people came to America to escape religious persecution, and they knew they could come over here to our shores and start anew, and they would be able to practice whatever religion they wanted, and that's still active today. That's why America is the melting pot that it has come to be. You can bump into any religion at any place. It's gone to a point where you're not surprised if you're in Chicago and you bump into a Muslim, or if you're in Washington and you bump into a Buddhist. It just doesn't surprise anybody anymore. And that's because of the Establishment Clause and the religious freedom it gave to Americans when it was created, and to Americans who were to be born, and to people who would come settle in America thereafter. Next, we get to the favorite clause of almost all those teenagers out there. Parents listening, you know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about freedom of speech. Freedom of speech is a clause that is so often misused, and people just don't understand its true meaning. Like I said, you have so many teenagers out there that'll insult their parents. When their parents tell them, "You can't talk to me like that," The teenagers go, "It's a free country. I have freedom of speech. I could say whatever I want." That's really not what it is, people. What free speech means has changed over the years. For example, within 10 years of the Bill of Rights coming into place, U.S. President John Adams passed an act written to restrict the speech of supporters of his opponent, Thomas Jefferson. So when freedom of speech first came out, the very first president that had a chance to utilize it did it. And anybody who spoke in favor of Thomas Jefferson, who was running across from him, they were in big trouble because that was illegal. Obviously, not allowed anymore. Nowadays, parties let the other party get themselves in trouble with their goings-on behind their wives' back and their stupid statements that they make. They don't have to tell people not to talk about it anymore. But that's a different case. Now, it's safe to say we've come a long way since then, but freedom of speech is still a tricky issue. We're going to get more into this when we talk about Occupy Oakland and what should be allowed and what shouldn't be, because there is gray area, but to a lot of people, it's black and white. Next up is the freedom of the press, and that ensures more freedoms as far as speech. It makes sure people can not only say whatever they want, but have the right to publish and distribute their speech as well. This is big, especially nowadays, because of the blogging community. Blogs are absolutely blowing up in the world right now. I've got one myself, I'm not going to lie. And it's just a way to say whatever it is you want to say. And I love it. Mine personally is sports. And you would think you could not get yourself in a lot of trouble with sports, but that's false. I mean, just look at the recent news. We have Ryan Braun got a 50-game suspension for performance-enhancing drugs lifted because of technicality. I'm not going to get into that because that's not what this story is about. What it is about, though, is so many people being able to take their opinions to blogs and call the legal system out and say that it's failing and say that this technicality shouldn't get him off and that he should still be punished. I myself was able to say I still believe Ryan Braun is a cheater, even though he was proven not guilty. And that is protected because of the freedom of the press and the freedom of speech. So a regular average Joe like myself can go on the internet and say their opinions like that and be protected. And it's really great because there are so many blogs about so many things. Everybody's a critic. Everywhere you go, you find something negative. And you can all relate to this. I'm trying to make the First Amendment relatable to you listening right now. And all of you have read a bad review or seen a blog about your favorite movie or your favorite song or your favorite actor or your favorite pitcher or your favorite point guard and seen someone say that they think it's not good. And you disagree. And that's allowed. And that's what's beautiful about what we have going on in this country is you do not have to form your opinions to what people above you think. You can think whatever you want, and it's a great thing. Now, when we're moving on, we get to the freedom of assembly, and this is going to be the key topic in the Occupy Oakland movement and the Occupy of Anything movement, because it is about mostly the freedom of assembly. This came along largely because the British violated this in the years leading up to the American Revolution, and the revolutionaries then decided to include the right of the people to assemble peacefully. Well, like I said, we'll get back to this in the Occupy movement, but this was one of the ones where the colonists who came over from England hated the way this functioned over there, that you were not allowed to protest the king. Even if the majority of the people dislike the king, you'd be put down. Your rebellion would be put down, usually by death. And that was unacceptable to the colonists who came over. So, of course, they put this in the First Amendment that you can peacefully assemble and protest something, because that's what they broke away from. And if they didn't allow their people to do it here in early America, then they would have basically been just a branch of England, and that's what they were trying to avoid. So that's why that came along. And then finally, there's the right to petition. This was much more of a tool back during the Revolutionary era when petition was the only way to fight an unjust law. It's less common now, but it's certainly still used. This right is key because it gave disgruntled citizens a chance to feel like they could be a part of the governmental process. This, of course, was largely important because the citizens were just coming from a monarchy and didn't want to feel repressed under the new government. So, of course, they had to have this clause in there. Otherwise, it would have felt like they just moved from England to New England. And I know we have a New England now, but that's not what I mean. What I'm talking about is if they came over here and they weren't allowed to assemble peacefully and they weren't allowed to petition, then what is really the difference? The difference is you're over here without nice communities and neighborhoods and established streets and roads and cities. So you really accomplished nothing by coming over and fighting the war. So largely, yes, the First Amendment, which was ratified back in 1791 as a part of the Bill of Rights, was mostly about the rights of the people back then, but it certainly still applies now. Like I said, over 200 years without a lot of changes. Now, that's a walk through the First Amendment. That's to get you familiar with what the First Amendment is, because outside of freedom of speech, most people are not 100% familiar with what the First Amendment is and where it came from. Now, we're going to go to a break, and when we come back in studio, we're going to have Alexandra Slatoff, Piedmont resident, as I mentioned before, and we're going to talk to her about the Occupy Oakland movement, how it's affected her, how she thinks it's being run, how it's being handled by both the protesters and the government, and how it's affected the Oakland area. It's going to be really interesting. I invite you to come back. This is real world stuff we're talking now, not just feeling like you're reading from a textbook. This is how it's affecting you. And this is why this special was so interesting to me and why I wanted to do this for you listening at home. You're listening to Save the Best for First, the First Amendment story, with your host for the time, Brian Sanchez. And you're listening to radio.dominican.edu. We'll see you after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. You're listening to Save the Best for First, the First Amendment story, with your host, Brian Sanchez, on world-famous Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. Now, as promised, I do have a special guest in studio to discuss Occupy Oakland with us, and that is Miss Alexandra Slatoff. Now, Alex, first of all, do you mind if I call you Alex?
Oh, of course not.
Okay, so Alex, you are a Piedmont resident, correct?
Yes, I am, born and raised.
And Piedmont is in the Oakland area?
It is actually the center of the Oakland area.
So is it safe to say that the Occupy Oakland movement has made its way to Piedmont and affected you?
Oh, definitely.
And that, of course, is what makes you the perfect candidate to come get interviewed for this First Amendment spot we're doing here on radio.dominican.edu. Now, on a day-to-day basis, on your daily life, how has Occupy Oakland affected you personally?
Well, I spend a lot of time in Oakland, and Occupy Oakland affects every aspect of Oakland. Transportation, public transportation in Oakland is slower. Certain areas are just bogged down because the protesters are there. There's a smell to Oakland now.
Why is that?
A lot of the protesters are not the cleanest people. They're wonderful people. They're just not necessarily always the cleanest. They don't have the facilities they need to shower and go to the bathroom and do other hygienic things. So, unfortunately, there's a bit of a smell. Also, there is quite a bit of police presence now.
Yeah.
Which means they just ride around the streets and are looking for trouble. And it makes it slightly uncomfortable just to be in Oakland.
Very good, very good. Now, you mentioned before about some of the negative effects that it's having on the city of Oakland. Now, we went over earlier, as you know, the First Amendment has the freedom of assembly. Do you think that these occupiers are successfully enacting their freedom of assembly protected by the First Amendment.
Well, I'm really big on the idea of First Amendment rights. I think every person has a right to all of their freedoms. However, I think that the Occupy Oakland movement should really take a step back and look at how they're using their freedom of assembly. While it's great they're assembling, at this point, is it beneficial for their cause to assemble the way they do? I mean, it's great that they're out there in full force, but there's also a lot of negative press out there about them being out there in full force, and a lot of people who aren't fully about the cause out there. And so a lot of times it ends up looking more negative than positive when they're just trying to do their good deeds.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned earlier about the smell that's going on in certain areas of Oakland because these people are forced to defecate in areas that weren't made for that. And that carries. I mean, that smells. Am I right?
It does smell.
Now, do things go around the Oakland area making fun of these people because of the way they are living their lives during this Occupy movement?
Oh, definitely. I know a lot of Oakland members will say when they see somebody that's unshowered or doesn't look clean, they'll say, oh, it looks like we got an Occupy member here. And I know there's a lot of jokes about it. But in all seriousness, the people of Oakland have been very, very supportive and very caring. And the people of Piedmont, too, of, you know, the people who are working in Occupy Oakland. However, you know, patients do run out, and I just hope they will get their point across before everybody's patience runs out.
Have you noticed that, though, because this Occupy Oakland movement has been going on for a while and it is dwindling, are people in the area tired of it? Have they said, okay, you've had your right to assemble and petition, you've done that, now enough's enough? Because the Occupy movement is about staying in an area, which of course they have been kicked from to a different area, until what you want happens. Have they overstayed their welcome?
I don't know about overstayed their welcome. You know, I think it's great they've been getting things accomplished, but I definitely do see a pattern. Something, you know, they'll be fighting for something, and a little part of that'll get some media attention because there'll be some failings on the government side, you know, whether it's the mayor of Oakland or the police force or even just general citizens who are bad mouthing the Occupy movement. And people are very quick to stand up for people in the Occupy movement, but then they're also very quick to back off and, you know, say, yeah, I'm beginning to get tired of it. So it just depends on what's going on at the moment. And I honestly think that they should really seriously think about how much longer they're willing to keep this up and how much longer the city of Oakland is going to keep that positive ideal around them.
Yeah, I mean, they can certainly, like any guest having a good time, you're not going to want to leave. That's a tale as old as time, if you will. And that seems to be what could be happening pretty soon. I mean, these people obviously are fighting for something. They are not just out there partying. But what another thing I wanted to touch on as far as First Amendment rights go is the freedom of speech. And I mentioned before about teenagers, and they're the ones who throw it around the most. They think they can swear or use inappropriate language and say, I have freedom of speech. It's a free country. That speech is not protected. Speech against the government is protected. But if it's vulgar, it's not. Has there been vulgar language on signs or in writing or even yelled at these occupied movements?
I know I've seen some signs just driving around Oakland and just hanging out in Oakland that are from Occupy members that are pretty explicit towards the government and just towards their cause and, you know, whoever they're fighting against at the time. And I know that the Occupy movement at least used to have quite a few people who maybe weren't as much about the cause and more about the ideal. And that's kind of happening more and more as we're having people who, you know, they're into the idea and they're into the ideal of, you know, being a freedom fighter and being a rebel against the government or, you know, fighting for the cause of what they care about. But less and less, if you talk to some more of the Occupy Oakland people, they're less about the cause and more about the idea of that this is a principle now and this is what they're doing. But you still have a couple people who at this point know more about what's going on in those political sections than many people who, you know, just the common people on the street, or actually some of the politicians themselves. I mean, if you go out there, there are some people and some protesters out there who could tell you everything you need to know about City Hall, tell you everything that's going on in their central issue, whatever it is, if it's homelessness or whatever, they could tell you every piece of legislation that has to deal with homelessness that's been passed in Oakland in the past 20 years, because that's what they're spending their time doing. They're spending their time researching and figuring it out and protesting. But on the flip side, you also have people who are jumping in and seeing it as a good time to kind of hang out and party with their friends and, you know, not necessarily spend the cause for good. So it's, you just have to be careful, and you have to realize that it's not, maybe not all for good, but there are good people in it.
Absolutely. Now, back to the vulgar language part that is not protected by the First Amendment, which is important. And you're listening to Save the Best for First, the First Amendment Story with Brian Sanchez. I'm here in studio with Alex Sladoff, Piedmont resident and someone who is has been affected by and is very knowledgeable about the Occupy Oakland movement. As I'm here trying to take you into real world First Amendment issues, not just reading you from a textbook what the First Amendment is, how it came about. I'm trying to actually show you how it happens in the world.
I know that part of what's been happening with Occupy Oakland is a lot of people are beginning to get frustrated because it's actually starting to affect their day-to-day life. And that's part of the vulgarity, is a lot of people aren't necessarily protesting to the right people anymore. I mean, my mother, God bless her, is a public defender and has been stopped 3 or 4 times from getting into the courthouse to defend the very people they are talking and they are targeting, saying, you know, these people are being treated badly. She could not get into the courtroom because the Occupy movement had encircled and encompassed the courthouse and was not letting anybody in. So here you have somebody who's trying to fight the good cause and has been fighting it for close to 30 years. And, you know, she's saying, I totally support you and I've been fighting your cause for 30 years. Trust me, I did it before many of you were born, but, you know, I can't do that. I can't do my job when you're not letting me into the building. And so my mom, who's one of their biggest supporters, was frustrated and done because they were stopping her from actually helping them. And that's happening more and more. So it's not necessarily vulgarity, but it's just such kind of brute force that they're not necessarily sometimes thinking of the right way or thinking of the end solution. So it's not necessarily vulgarity of words, but it's vulgarity of actions that sometimes lead to vulgarity of words.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there of what I was trying to get out earlier when I was talking about them overstaying their welcome. Here you have one of the women who have been fighting for them, alongside them even, at a higher level than they are in the court system, and they are preventing her from helping them. These people seem to have taken it to an extreme to where it's no longer productive, but still protected by the right to assemble, even though they're doing it improperly and hurting themselves. And I want to get to a part where I ask you to play president a little bit. Now, I have a problem with the right to assemble. I think there should be limitations on it. I think there should be maybe a time limit on it, maybe places where you can't, such as in front of a courthouse, preventing these attorneys to do their job. Do you think the right to assemble should be taken away in some cases? Or do you think it should remain where you can assemble peacefully? As long as it's peaceful, you can do it whenever and wherever you please.
Well, I am a big believer in the First Amendment, and I do think you should be able to assemble anywhere you want as long as it's peaceful. However, there is what I've been heard and it's been called the Woodstock phenomenon, which is when you have a ton of people gathering in one place to the point where it almost becomes an emergency situation, or it becomes a national crisis because you have people who can't be safe. There's not enough bathrooms, there's not enough water, there's not enough food, there's just not access to the right materials. And in that case, I could see it no longer being okay. I could see a government stepping in and saying, you know what, this is too big. And we're not, you know, trying to shut you down. We like your cause. We like this, but it's dangerous to people. So if freedom of assembly becomes dangerous to anybody, either the parties involved or the parties outside, I can see it. The only other place I think would be bad for freedom of assembly is either outside a hospital or outside some sort of facility that, you know, deals with other people's life and death situations.
A third party that's just there to help people.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, while the courthouse is a good place because it has a lot of officials that go in and out of there, maybe across the street from the courthouse could have been just as effective, if not more effective. I'm not going to say, oh, don't go outside the courthouse because it's your deal and you have the right to assemble and I will protect that no matter what. I mean, we are literally in a war fighting right now, the idea of freedom of speech. And, you know, I think that the idea that we want to keep spreading freedom of speech and we want to have that be one of our main principles we hold dear, and freedom of assembly, I always think is a very important thing. However, I also think that they need to maybe have checks on them or have meetings or have something where they can communicate with the government in a safe space, you know, to talk about the fact of their occupying and talk about their assembly, because it could go borderline Woodstock. I mean, it hasn't yet, but it, you know, if it got big again and there got and there was enough people, it could be a dangerous thing. And I just don't want anybody to get hurt. We actually have had people injured. We've had police officers injured. We've had protesters injured. We've had bystanders injured. And it's, you know, I don't think there should ever be anybody injured. So I think when injury starts happening, which is sometimes bound to happen if you just have that many people who are that riled up and that passionate about an issue, it's bound to happen. But I think when danger or when somebody else's health or well-being is put in danger, I think that might be a time when the government or a third party, because they could have a third party, they could have somebody who's not the police, somebody who's not the government, maybe a third party agency step in and be a mediator between the two. But I think it's important that it gets dealt with.
Now, I love where you're going with this, because now we're really applying not just what the First Amendment is, but how it affects America and the citizens of it, which is really what we're trying to get to on the specials, make people think about their day-to-day lives and what the First Amendment does to them. And one key thing to hit about the right to assemble is it is the right to assemble peacefully. So obviously, if this group of assembling people start causing harm to people outside of their movement, they need to be shut down. That's a given. But now the question becomes, in the areas where the Occupy movement is getting so large that it is stopping how a city works and it needs to be contained just for the common decency of the average working person who can't afford to join the Occupy movement, there have been many instances of police brutality. Pepper spray being used, nightsticks being used on old elderly women, which just seems horrid. But the question becomes now, if they are assembling peacefully, but impeding the daily lives of the people they're trying to fight for, and they need to be moved, it's such a large group of people that it takes force to move them. Asking them to move just doesn't get it done. And you have to use, I'm not saying you need to pepper spray an old lady, which should never be allowed, but you have to at least push. Do you think that should be allowed, or should this group of peaceful, we're going to assume peaceful assemblers, be left alone because they are protected?
Well, I think it's all about situational. I mean, I love the police officers of Oakland. God knows I know many of them. But I know also if they're in a riled up situation, emotions can get out of control. I mean, I've seen arguing between police officers and Occupy movement people. I think there needs to be mutual respect on both sides. You know, the Occupy movement can't respect the policemen if they're going to pepper spray them. But the, you know, policemen need to realize that the Occupy movement isn't just a nuisance that they need to be dealt with. It's people who have families, and I'm sure they know that, but I think part of it is they're saying, okay, well, here's a huge issue in my city that I should deal with, that they may not necessarily know how to deal with. But I think another issue in the Occupy movement is we have, you know, a lot of people who are leaders in the Occupy movement, which is great, but it's not like maybe going back to the 60s in the Civil Rights March. You know, you had defined leaders that came out of that. You had Malcolm X. You know, you had, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. You had people that the police could have gone up and said, you know what? I think it's great that this protest is happening here. Could you fly here, though? And because it's getting out of control and we need somebody, we need a leader to step up who we can meet with and say, you know what? You're in a public park. There is supposed to be a child event in this public park. You know, there's going to be an elementary school that's coming to play a baseball game here or whatever it is. We need people to move because this, you know, event has been dealt with before. It's been handled here and it's beginning to impede on other citizens.
Well, now my question is, you brought up that these occupiers that are getting pepper sprayed and beaten are people with families. It's important to remember that these policemen, who I'll say 95% of the time, do not go to the Occupy movement with malice in their heart. They are not trying to harm somebody. But if you go to the big ones, and Oakland was a big one 3 months ago, it was a very large contingent of occupiers. These policemen are outnumbered 15, even 20 to 1. And if they think they're in a situation where they cannot handle the masses of people that are there that could easily overrun them, should they just get out of there before they use force? Because these people are peacefully assembling. We have seen them pepper spray people who are just sitting there peacefully. So again, assuming that the occupiers are not attacking the cops, if the cops feel threatened, should they just leave the situation, or is it their duty to stay there?
Well, I know, you know, many of them do have families and are great guys and don't go there to try to have any sort of negative consequence. But I think it all goes back to mutual respect. If you have respect for those people who are protesting, I think cops should be the natural leader. They should say, all right, I have a badge, I have authority, but instead of pushing the authority in the face with pepper spray, I'm going to push the authority in the face with words and say, you know what? I don't want to have anything happen. I don't want to pepper spray. I don't want to, you know, have to arrest you. I don't want to have anything to do with that. What I want to do is I want to say, hey, we have an event going on. Hey, you know, you're impacting traffic flow, whatever the issue is. We need you to figure out another place to be. We need you to figure out somewhere else to go, or we need you to find another way to handle your cause. And I think if there's a diplomatic solution and maybe give the cops a 1 day course, if it was really that bad, I mean, there was cops out everywhere trying to fix this issue. So, you know, take all the cops, take 1 day, give them training in diplomatic talking, give them training in leadership talking so they can go in, because most of these people are very, very intelligent people. I mean, you know, there's the average Joe on the street also who doesn't fully understand the cause, or, you know, it's just anti-establishment. But these people are exceptionally bright and have opinions, and that's why they're there, is because they're intelligent and they're wanting to finally do something about something that's going on. So with intelligent people, it reasons that intelligent conversation would actually make more of an effect than violence. Because if you're going to club somebody, they're just going to get angry and want to fight back. If you explain your reasoning to them, you're going to be a lot more likely to get an olive branch back, because they're going to understand that you understand them and that you accept them and that you don't hate them just based off who they are. You want to help them and you want to be able to help them and be involved with them. But unfortunately, many of the cops get uncomfortable or get scared because they're outnumbered. Whereas, you know, I was actually across the street from one of the protests eating lunch with my mother. And she actually knew one of the cops, and he came over, and he's like, oh, hey, yeah, I'm going to grab some napkins. And we were talking, and we're like, oh, why are you grabbing napkins? He's like, actually, one of the older women who was protesting, she fell, and it looks like she has a cut on her. Like, I'm going to grab some napkins from your table to bring over to her just so she can, you know, bandage up her leg. We're going to try to get a paramedic over to see her. And he just stepped up and was a natural leader. He was talking to the protesters. He was not saying, I'm an authority figure, I'm above you. He was simply being personable and saying, you know what? You know, I'm sorry you're here. Here's some napkins. We really can't have you here, guys. And slowly there was crowds of people who were kind of around him, of the protesters. He maybe had 30, 40 protesters who were standing around talking to him or asking him questions or, you know, seeing that he was actually caring about them. Now, there was a cop all over in the other corner, too, who was screaming at people and nobody was listening to him.
All right. So to round out this interview, we touched on it earlier, but to go back and really connect the First Amendment with real world situations, these people are assembling peacefully. They have the right to do that and they have the right to petition. A lot of their speech is protected. Anything vulgar is not. But at what point do they start losing effect? They will always be protected by the First Amendment as long as they're peaceful and they are not vulgar. But are they starting to lose steam? Is the Occupy Oakland movement specifically starting to lose its effect because of how it's become so much less organized and without a purpose like it had when it started?
I don't know if it's losing steam per se, but it's definitely broken off into a ton of different directions. And unfortunately, with the different directions, I think comes a little bit of disorganization. And with the disorganization, I think that makes it less effective, which is sad to say, because if you looked at the original Occupy Oakland and you looked at originally the doctrine of what they're trying to do and about all the great things they were trying to get accomplished, you know, you want them to succeed. You want them to be able to do what they can do. But unfortunately, they just kind of broke off. And now they're in tons of different places and they don't have, you know, not everybody agrees with how to handle it. Some people say, oh, yeah, we should fight back. Others are saying, oh, well, why don't we just sit here peacefully and wait for a diplomatic solution? So, you know, it's as long as you have such different personalities all protesting, which is bound to happen, I don't know how much they're going to be able to get done, and I don't know how effective they are because they're in so many different directions. I really hope they're able to come out on top and come out in a way where it's effective and come out in a way where it's safe to everybody.
So the Occupy Oakland movement, still protected under the First Amendment, of course, may be losing its strength of impact on the people that it's going for later in the movement now than before.
Most definitely.
All right. I'd like to thank you very much, Alex, for coming in and join us. Did a great job of giving us insight on how the Occupy movement is affecting the average citizen that is not a part of it, and really giving the people at home a chance to see how the First Amendment should be utilized. Not only how to be protected under it, but how to effectively stay protected and get your point across. So thank you very much. That was great stuff.
Oh, well, you're welcome.
All right. That'll do it for Alex, folks. Again, fantastic interview. She's just a wonderful job, eloquent speaker, everything you could ask for from an interview. Now, we're going to go to a break, and when we get back, we'll have our closing thoughts, and then that'll do it. So stay tuned. You're listening to the first, Save the Best for First, the First Amendment Story with Brian Sanchez on radio.dominican.edu. Welcome back, folks, to Save the Best for First, the First Amendment Story with Brian Sanchez here on radio.dominican.edu. And we're just coming off of that fantastic interview with Alex Sladoff on how the First Amendment and the Occupy movements were working hand in hand, and how you can see the First Amendment being acted out in real life. And I think that was just great stuff. But unfortunately, we've come to the end of the program, as we actually ran a little overtime. But I wasn't going to cut you guys off from that interview, because that was very valuable stuff. And I think it was important to have heard all of that. But that's going to do it for today's special, Save the Best for First, the First Amendment Story. Hopefully, I was able to shed some light on what the First Amendment really covers and what it engulfs. Many people know of it. Not a whole lot of people know all of the rights within it or what exactly they do, as far as freedom of speech, not covering all speech, and the right to assemble as long as it's peaceful. Those are just some examples. I'd like to give a special thanks to Ms. Alexandra Sladoff for coming in one more time and sharing her views and firsthand experience with the Occupy Oakland movement and how the First Amendment was in play there and how all of this actually affects real life people in real life situations. That's going to do it for me, folks. I hope you enjoyed the show. This is Brian Sanchez signing off on radio.dominican.edu.